Hello, welcome to Strange Love of Movies. My name is Olivia Martinez, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Oscar and Emily Martinez. And today we are talking about The Zone of Interest, which is the recent film from the British director Jonathan Glazer, and it is one of the heaviest films we've seen of the year, probably the heaviest film nominated for Best Picture, and it's a true triumph.
It was a little bit of a surprise nominee.
It
got a lot of good critical reception. Some critics didn't like it, but It had a lot of positive reviews. And I think that Jonathan Glazer is very admired as a director, as an artist. But people were surprised because this is not the kind of movie that is going to draw big audiences.
No, this is not a Barbie. I'll tell you that right now.
I would agree with that statement.
Thank you, Papa. I will say, though, this movie has intrigued me since, I kid you not, May of 2023. I've been wanting to see, because these European films, I swear, they come out and then every critic and their mother sees this movie, you know, in like the summer before. And then these movies, they come out in LA and New York, maybe in, you know, October. But then for the rest of us, like in Dallas, I mean, Zone of Interest came out 2 weeks ago in theaters. So we finally got to see it. We actually got to see it at the historic Texas Theater in Dallas, where, Dad, you can explain.
Yes, when Lee Harvey Oswald, the suspected assassin of John F. Kennedy.
Oh, you are a conspiracy papa.
No, I'm just saying, he was never tried. So, I mean, they're pretty sure he did it, but he escaped and unfortunately shot a police officer that they can prove. And they found him on, somebody reported a man matching his description going into a movie theater, and it was a Texas theater, and it's still there in Oak Cliff.
You can see the seat where he, yeah. Or at least the location of the seat where he was arrested.
Yeah, so it seemed weirdly appropriate to see this really heavy movie there with that kind of, I don't know, kind of spirit.
Kind of, yeah, dark memories.
Yeah, really though. And the theater was magnificent, and it was an old-timey theater where, get this, I mean, we used to do this back in the day, but you can't assign your seats. So we get in there like 5 minutes before the movie's starting. It's pitch black for some reason. And we just cannot see anything. So we just sit in the nearest seats. And then the light finally comes up and we're like, oh, we could have sat like in way better seats. But it's fine. It worked out.
It was really dark.
So dark in there.
It reminded me of when I as a kid, used to go to movies with my mom. And one time we went with my mom and her best friend who didn't, I guess she was already getting to the point where she didn't see that great in the dark. Mm-hmm. And so she tried to sit on somebody's lap.
No!
And she kept saying, I can't see anything, real loud,
right? Oh, no.
Yeah, that's like going to old movie houses. That's kind of what it was, right? I mean, it is, they used to show movies back in the heyday, and then now they show repertory films and also new films like Zone of Interest. And I will say this about the movie. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what it was about.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely nothing. And we've mentioned this before. Sometimes you anticipate a film because you read the book or you saw the play, you saw the musical, whatever, or you just love the director, you love the actor. So you follow all this news. But this is a case of not knowing a single thing. And you walk in and it's really dark and this movie starts. Should we talk about the beginning or is that a spoiler alert?
Yeah, well, how about we just spoil this film? Go see it if you're interested in art. I mean, you call Jonathan Glazer an artist. He really is. I mean, all these shots look like paintings and they're incredibly well done. It's a technical masterwork. Go see this movie before listening to the rest. Even though, really, this is the kind of movie where, like, there isn't much to talk about. Like, you know what I mean? There's not like a huge like, oh, and then she died and then this happened. Like, no.
But not a lot of, really not a lot of plot points, not a lot of plot points to talk about. Yeah. But I don't know. I have mixed feelings. I think some people would benefit from going not knowing anything at all and then just kind of gradually figuring out what the story that's being told. But I also think a lot of people would benefit from knowing a little bit about what they're going to see. And that way, especially like the beginning, which is very strange, but you can kind of understand why it starts the way it does.
Yes, because someone like me, I mean, now that I've seen enough movies and I know enough about history and stuff, I would have been able to understand, okay, this is... Spoiler, this is in the Holocaust and they're right next to a concentration camp, but some people probably have no idea.
No.
And then be like, well, that was boring.
Let me give it a shot about the plot, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's about a nice German family who lives near a lake and it just shows their day-to-day activities.
That's one take. Yes. And of course the
dad goes to work.
Yes, yeah. Dad goes to work. He loves his kids. The mom is very attentive to her children. Yeah. They seem happy. And
he might work at a bank. He might work at an accounting firm. He might be all sorts of things, you know.
Yes, might just be anybody.
But then...
But he's not.
But then you see him in uniform, and it's a Nazi uniform. And then you see the walls. It was really nice the way he did the director's, the shots. Everyone, each one was framed like a photograph where you saw the guard tower, or you saw the the crematorium furnace, I guess, or the result of the
furnace. And you see the smoke coming from the trains.
Yes, yeah.
And the smoke coming from the furnaces.
That's while you're looking at their gorgeous garden.
The most beautiful garden I've ever seen.
Perfect, perfect setting for a family home. Or, most perfect family home in terms of lovely house, lovely gardens. And then, but just over the wall, you see hints. And that's all it is. And that's what I guess some people probably would have trouble with, is it really doesn't show anything that's going on in the concentration camps, or camp, it's Auschwitz next door. But I think that's why this stands out from other Holocaust films, because that story's been told a lot. But this kind of tells the story of the people who kind of know what's going on as far as his family, mm-hmm. the commandant's family, but they kind of choose not to look over the wall, not to think about the horrors that are going on within just a few yards of them.
Yeah. And literally the father is the one causing all of these horrors, because this is based on the story by Martin Amis about Rudolf Höss, Rudolf Hess?
Rudolf Hess, that's somebody else.
Different people, but Rudolf Höss was one of the most successful, it's terrible to say, but one of the most successful Nazi leaders of a concentration camp. And then his wife, Hedwig Höss, and then their four kids. They have four kids, I think. And Hedwig Höss is played by Sandra Hüller, who is actually a recent first-time Academy Award nominee for Anatomy of a Fall. So it's pretty crazy that she was in these two huge films this year. And something interesting about her is she actually is German, but she speaks a million languages, because she was speaking French in Anatomy of a Fall.
That's right.
And
and English, too.
Yeah, so she's...
Although she wasn't playing a French person in that.
Oh, that's right. She was German.
But, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's fair. But anyway, she is German, and she vowed to never play a Nazi. But then Jonathan Glazer sent her this script and said, do whatever you want with it. Find this character. Please just give it a shot. And then she did. And she did an excellent job, because she is a Nazi sort of, but at the same time, it's like Nazi adjacent. And she's evil, too.
I know. I think she's really the character that you grow to despise the most, ultimately.
Yeah, and then Rudolf is played by Christian Friedel, who I don't know if I've ever seen him in anything, but he's...
Apparently both of them are huge stars in Germany.
Oh, okay. Good for him.
I know, but I haven't seen him in anything.
Yeah, he was super good, too.
I think one thing that I read that the director didn't give Hüller a lot of direction as far as what her character should be doing while she's in these different scenes. He just kind of left it up to her. And she realized, I think just kind of as she was acting it, she's constantly moving. She's constantly doing things and straightening things up, or doing things for the kids, or whatever.
Running up the stairs,
dealing with the dog, whatever.
Who was actually Sandra Hüller's dog in real life?
Yeah,
very badly behaved.
Yeah, very. But in other words, I think that is very telling as to what somebody in that position might be like, because sort of like if she stays busy enough, she doesn't have to think about where that new coat. That new fur coat came from, or why her servants are behaving the way they do around her out of fear. She doesn't have to think about it. She just stays busy.
Yep.
And I think that's how a lot of people who live with guilt, how they survive.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other things we noticed is that the senses, all your senses are engaged, because there's some really
Except for taste and smell.
Well, except for those two, but the other 17 or whatever. But the it's amazing how the colors are
beautiful.
At some point, there's some almost X-ray vision kind of scenes that come out of nowhere, and you think somebody's dreaming, but then it turns out it's not. It's something else that's going on. But one thing I was going to say is that, you know, it's rated PG-13. I thought it might have been rated PG because there's no nudity, there's no language, there's no drug use. And there's no weapons. There's not a single gun shot.
Why is it PG-13? Just for thematic darkness?
I guess probably, the themes, but you know, they don't show anything really. And that's how a lot of people would have lived their lives. They wouldn't know. And that's why they couldn't believe it happened when it came out. All these, and they kept such great records, right? We've talked about that before. That's why, you know, very meticulous records. I shouldn't say great, but meticulous records on who was transported where and who got... who was essentially killed where that's, you know, it's just so bureaucratic, you know, that they just put it down to that. And
German efficiency in the worst way.
Yeah, terrible. But isn't that crazy that there's not a single, I don't know about y'all, but I kept expecting and want to see Clint Eastwood, well, younger Clint Eastwood, like with a machine gun and where Eagles Dare, like paratrooper getting in there and
shooting. That would have been crazy.
I thought there would have been something weird. No, but... that's only in the movies, you know. I mean, this is different. You know, this is different
and
kind of.
So another way that this is different is, you do not see the reckoning. I mean, I guess history tells us that he ended badly. He was punished, but the way it ends, we don't. If we didn't know anything else, we'd think
he's doing just fine. Yeah.
And saying that's just in the movies or whatever, it makes a good point that this film was shot like a documentary film. So they just had cameras placed throughout the home. And then Jonathan Glazer, I mean, there is a script, but at the same time, he was kind of just like, go. Because so much of the movie is not important dialogue, really. I mean, there are a few scenes like when the couple is talking near the lake and they're talking about like, when are you going to take me to Italy? And he just says, after the war. And I'm like, wow, you're very confident. You know, most of it is just like very calm dialogue, like, oh, have you gotten the cake out yet? Or,
and I think that's very intentional.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean,
they're just on the surface, at least, a regular family, which is so sinister. It's very disturbing.
Think about your own as a listener, like with your routine at the end of the day, you make sure, I don't know, the doors are locked, the garage door's down, the trash is taken out. And you see all of that play out where all the lights, remember, and all the locks that he had, he was like very deliberate, but it wasn't like, and like what you're thinking when that happens. I'm sure you had the same thoughts. Like he's not thinking about
the atrocities.
Yeah, the
just
atrocities
committed.
That he's committing or a better way to kill people or whatever. It's just, okay, well, is the door locked? Yes. Is the, you know, and then the lights, you know, turn on and off and
terrible.
Yeah. Very, very, I mean, really well done. You know, we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, we didn't go back to it. Should we go back to it?
Yes,
you want to explain
definitely.
What was going on?
Yes.
We weren't sure the movie was actually starting.
Yeah. So I had heard that this movie was different. So I assumed something weird. I guess weird. The beginning's weird. It's literally, I think, 3 or 4 minutes of just this droning ambient music that's really scary and loud. And I think it just represents the Holocaust, I would say, right? Or something.
I think so. I mean, I think just
it just gets you
to
in the
evoke
mood.
A certain mood. Yeah.
Because then immediately it pops up and it's the most beautiful lakeside and these kids are dressed so well. Everyone looks like they're having so much fun. And you're like, oh, this is going to be great. I mean, obviously we knew what it was about. I guess Papa didn't.
I didn't.
But we knew it was going to be dark, but it just looked so pretty. And then at the end of the film, they also, that song was insane. The credits song, I mean, it was just fantastic.
It was.
And it was also just like so sinister and dreadful.
But in the middle, remember, completely red for about 2 minutes.
Yes. I mean, it just kind of completely takes you out of your
I forgot
focus.
About that. Yeah. But that was not 2 minutes, Papa. It was
well,
like
maybe
the
minute. But it wasn't. It wasn't like, oh, you just saw all these people getting killed all of a sudden.
Yeah, it was just red.
Yeah, it was just red. It was like it symbolically showing... It was going to get a lot worse, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. And there wasn't a score in this film, really.
Really? Not
I mean, it was
really,
very, very quiet.
The music was played such a big part.
The music that they used and the sound design in general, because a lot of it was just like, oh, you just heard faint screams, faint train whistles, you know, just stuff like that. And something really interesting about that is that the sound mixer and designer actually went to Auschwitz and mapped out This is incredibly technical and genius, but they mapped everything out in relation to the home because they filmed at the actual home. And then they somehow figured out a way to drown the sounds out. Like, okay, this sound would be 500 feet from the home. This sound would be 3,000 feet. And it just evokes something.
To really give you an idea of what they could be aware of.
Yes, another scene that was out of the ordinary was the apple scene. And mm-hmm. Emily, do you want to talk about that, especially the visuals and what it represented? Or what we thought it was. I wasn't sure what we were watching. I really thought it was a dream because he was reading... What was it?
Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah, reading a fairy tale to his children, and that's when they would show these scenes.
Yes, and it was just all of a sudden they would break to this woman, and what would that be, thermal?
It was like X-ray. It looked like an X-ray, honestly, but it was probably night vision.
Yeah, it looked like thermal imaging.
Thermal imaging of this girl, and it looked like she was picking something up and leaving something in this sort of field, and then they show her a couple of more times, and eventually you get the idea that this is somebody who is leaving apples for the prisoners at the camp. But again, that it takes you a minute to kind of realize what you're watching, but I think that was probably a very valuable scene or valuable character maybe to include, because remind you there were also people who were aware of what was going on and were trying to do a good thing for them.
And that girl was actually based on a real person named Alexandra, and Jonathan Glazer actually met her during his research. And as a 12-year-old, she was part of the Polish resistance. What a brave girl. And she would cycle to the camp and leave apples for the starving prisoners. And there's actually a throwaway line, I'm sure y'all noticed, but when they were like, a prisoner died fighting over for an apple or something like that. Do you guys remember that?
Yes, I do remember
something like that.
That.
So like, even though she was trying her best to do good, it probably caused a lot of tough stuff. You know, it's just like everything, there's no winning.
Yes.
It's just terrible.
Yes. And how valuable food, something as simple as an apple
it's
would
so sad.
Be. And then the other time that the kind of the narrative is interrupted is when they have, toward the end, when
powerful
they cut to modern day. And it's a cleaning crew at the modern day Auschwitz Museum. And you see them cleaning the glass, and behind the glass you see the shoes stacked up and the suitcases stacked up, the different exhibits at the museum.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the cleaning crew is just cleaning the glass. And
just every day.
You're just, walking. And it probably does symbolize... I mean, first of all, it reminds you of what really went on there behind the wall, but also it probably symbolizes how we tend to kind of cleanse history sometimes, that sometimes we kind of clean up the nastier parts of history and our story, and in a way they were doing that because it was, again, the museum tells a story, but it's in a much
glossier way.
Right.
And I also, something you just said made me realize, I wonder if also it was meant to represent like these cleaning crew, these women or whatever, they do this every morning, every night, and it's just so like mundane to them. And he did the exact same thing. Just
true.
A very, just going
to
Auschwitz.
Yeah, they're as desensitized to the whole situation as he was.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But then also that modern day scene is cut with him just like retching in the... in the stairwell, which been there, done that. Well, no, not actually, but that's a terrible feeling. But like he was doing that after being sent to another job. And I feel like that could also symbolize him, maybe a part of him realizing what he's doing is horrible.
I think
horrible.
So too. And I think it was very intentional that he was dry heaving.
Yes.
He wasn't actually, he didn't, I mean, I don't know, but it's sort of like he was starting to feel something, but he almost hadn't gotten to that place yet. I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of my guess.
But it's fascinating to have a film with an ending like that where you can have all these theories, and probably all of them are right in a way because they're just so deep. There's so much to it.
Yeah, you can interpret it for yourself, for sure.
But I think this is one of those movies you would benefit seeing on the big screen because, I could see watching this on my computer. First of all, skipping the first 3 minutes of blackness.
Fast forward.
And then just like being so bored. But like, there's just something, I mean, immersive about it when you watch it on the big screen.
And this is the kind of film that is really a commitment of sorts on the part of the audience. You have to approach it knowing that it's not going to be certainly not an escapist film, that it's not always entertaining, you know, quote entertaining, but it does get you to a place and I think brings out some feelings and some thoughts that I believe are important for people to experience.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think, you know, I mean, and if you don't, then that's on you because, I mean, just like, you know, not every film is designed to entertain every single minute. It's to make you think and, you know, what would you do in that situation?
And you mentioned that the movie is based on a novel by Martin Amis, mm-hmm. who I guess has since passed away, but he was really great novelist. But I've read several of his books, but I haven't read this. So I'm curious, to go back and see how much. The feeling this is one of those that's, I think I saw that it was loosely based.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a feeling the filmmaker
great title,
really took
interesting
it,
characters,
yes,
and that's about
took
it.
Took it as his own, yes.
I could see that. Yeah, and something else. I keep talking about the technicality of this film, but it's just so interesting. But only practical natural lighting was used.
Which is
how
amazing.
How did they make it look like that?
That's hard, isn't it?
I mean, it looked so good.
Especially the indoor. I mean, a lot of it is indoors.
Yes, so. It still looks pretty. But I'll be really curious to see how this does at the Academy Awards. I could see it winning for sound design and a few other awards.
Best foreign film, international film.
Oh, definitely best international.
Although Anatomy of a Fall is on there too.
Oh, no, it's actually not.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
No, because for some reason, well, not for some reason, but there's this film called The Taste of Things, which I really want to see. That's another one of those I've been wanting to see since the summer. And it was on all the critics' best 2023 list, except no normal person was able to see it. They submitted that film to the Academy Awards instead of Anatomy of a Fall. And then Anatomy of a Fall is, nominated for actual best picture, which is crazy.
That is
But
funny.
Yeah, it's cool. There's a lot of good international cinema coming out.
Well, a couple of things, too. Something each of y'all said. Martin Amis, this book came out in 2014. That's fairly recent by novel standards, you know, only 10 years ago, right? But the other thing, you mentioned the title, and we kept wondering why it's called Zone of Interest, mm-hmm. and that's what the high command, the German, the Nazis would refer to restricted areas, and that certainly was restricted. Like you couldn't go in and out of that area unless you had a reason to be there, for obvious reasons. They didn't want people taking pictures or, you know, spreading the news of what was actually happening there.
They would refer to those areas as zones of interest.
Yeah, and usually a zone of interest is something the opposite of that, like like something that is interesting or something worth
Area 51.
Or visiting or whatever. But interesting, right?
It is
interesting.
Before we finish, I just want to say one thing about Jonathan Glazer. Did you know he worked with Radiohead in the early days? And he made
that would make sense.
He made Karma Police. And remember how disturbing
the music video?
Yeah, the music video. And yet it's controlled and intimate but detached. It's just amazing. It's 3 minutes, but that same tone is here in this film for, what is it, about 2 hours? 2.5?
It's an hour and a half.
Hour and a half, wow. It's
super
even shorter.
Short.
Yeah. So, But yeah, it's hard to say you enjoy this film, but you really appreciate it. I appreciate it, and I think we all did, but it was quite good. So we've never done this before, but I'm almost thinking we don't rate this film because how do you do that, right? For something so compelling, and yet it's so dark and so heavy, and you can't just reduce it to, you know, a certain number of whatever we usually do.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe just if we could just talk about should people see it? And in my opinion, I think they should because you may not get it, but it's something that sticks with you.
I think this is the kind of film that probably if all was right in the world, everyone would see and everyone would understand and get the message and come out of the theater thinking about why they need to be more aware maybe of the world around them. But honestly, I don't think most people would enjoy the movie. So if you go to see it, I recommend you know a little bit about what you're about to see and think while you're watching it. Think why the movie is made the way it is. And when you come out, be ready to think back on it and maybe discuss it with your friends. And hopefully then you really get the message of the film. But certainly don't go on just your average, if you just want to go to the movies on a Saturday night.
Not a great date night movie.
It's not that kind of, you'll be disappointed, I think, in that case.
Yeah, I also hope this film is not available on airplanes, because I worry people would be like, oh, this is not made for Best Picture, and then a great snooze fest on an airplane, probably. Because even though it's not boring, it is slow, and I think a lot of people will find that. Well, thank you for listening to our conversation about The Zone of Interest. Follow us on Instagram at Strange Love of Media. Visit our website, strangeloveofmovies.com. And we will be updating our podcast. It's been a while. I'm sorry about that. We've just had a lot going on recently. But we'll be updating it with a lot of Best Picture nominees shortly. Bye, guys.